The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
Good morning, David Doval. How are you?
Good morning. Good.
Thinking of buying fighting a new house?
I'm at the house fighting off a little cold. So
all right.
Thought I better hang out here. It's been
good.
It was probably a good week to have one because the weather was
stinky.
Was pretty wet.
Yeah, it was pretty nasty. Yeah.
About 3 inches of rain this week, so.
Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. Well, here we are. We are ready for 2 hours of home improvement discussions, conversations, questions, incantations, exuberations, exaltations, and other things that end in T-I-O-N. and we are at 704-570-1110. That's the way to get into the conversation. We love it when you join. It just makes it more fun. I have been thinking at great length, David, about Jim's question last week. You know, why do fans start at high and go down to low? And around 2 o'clock one morning, I'm like, wait a minute. If you buy a box fan or one of those big Home Depot fans or, you know, any fan that you buy, like a portable fan, it does the same thing. It starts at high and goes down to low. So this is no accident. I don't know. Perhaps it's an evolution that has taken place. I don't know. What did you explain last week? There was something about the electrical portion of a motor, that it was easy for the motor to start in high. This is
It's less strain. And it has to do because it's a shaded pole motor. You know, there's a more explanation for this, but there's the windings and, mm-hmm. and all that. But if you start it on high because you have that weight just hanging off of a shaded pole motor, it's easy to go from high and then get it to go low. But if you perform the experiment, if you turn that fan off and put it on low, unplug it, put it on low, and then plug it back in, I just think what it is it's harder on the motor to start it on low. I think it probably heats the motor up more, so I think that's why they start them on high.
All right. Well, it's
the simplest answer.
I think there's a life lesson in this, David. Every morning when you get out of bed, you should be high. No, every morning when you get out of bed, you should start on high. Just start on high, man. Don't wait. Don't rev up. Go. We call that the heroic minute. Check that out. They actually looked that up online. It's a really cool concept. The heroic minute. That first minute of the morning, be on high. All right, we've got to be on for Mike. Mike has a question. Good morning, Mike. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you this morning?
Hey, guys. I have a question that you've probably answered many times before. I just don't remember the answer. It has to do with what I think is mildew on my roof.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the sunny parts of the roof are just fine, but the part of the roof that gets in the shade quite a bit is darker in color, and I have a few streaks in some of the other part of the roof, which I think is mildew. I don't know, but is there anything that I can, you know, spray on and wash off to get rid of that mm-hmm. stuff?
Yeah, there's several products out there, Mike. Just real quick, one thing we would tell you before when you get ready to do all this, if you got shrubbery around the house and so on, soak it down really good with water and then do your deal and then soak it again, just so the chemicals don't bother the shrubs. As a general rule,
I'm lucky in that respect.
Okay. All right. Good deal. Then, Jomax, J-O-M-A-X is a manufacturer. And I think the product that they make is called M1 Roof and Deck Wash. And it's a concentrate. You add water to it. There's a DAP. I think David DAP still makes a product. I don't know. You may have to go online to find that product. But pretty much any of the house washes are going to work adequately on the roof, unless you got big, big moss buildup. That's another day's story, right? But just the graying out or the streaking,
that's all it is.
That'll be good. Now, so a couple things to think about. It's better to do this on a cool, shady day. I think follow the directions, but it'll tell you to get the roof wet, spray on the product in sections, and then let it sit a minute and rinse it off. And the reason you want to do that on a kind of a cooler or shadier day is you know what it's like on the roof, right? The minute that hits a super hot roof, it just evaporates and that doesn't do anything, right? But yeah, I think you'll find you'll be pleased. And then if you really, really want to be tricky, I think this is a roofer job, not a homeowner job, depending on the pitch of your roof. But David, I think they still make that zinc strip or what they call moss preventer. It's just a piece of galvanized zinc that goes up under the highest course of shingles. You tuck it up underneath and you let about an inch or two of it stick out. And Mike, the way it works is as the rain washes over that zinc, it dissolves ever so slightly. And the zinc creates a hostile environment for the fungus. So if you think, I remember just driving around down east where just like it's so hot and humid so much of the year, right? You would see like the big roof churches with the steeples and the roofs and the whole roof would be grayed out except where the steeple was that had like copper or some sort of metal on it, and wherever water washed off of that, the roof was spotless clean, and that was the principle. It was so. If you want to make it like last longer, that's an option. But like,
all right, that's a good option. I'm glad to hear that. I have a a ridge vent.
Yeah.
So
that's probably painted or aluminum, and is not going to do the trick for you.
No. I meant, would that be the place to put it?
Just underneath that. So the first course of shingles underneath or below that ridge vent, Mike, would be a good starting place.
Okay.
And then when you spray that stuff up, don't spray at an angle that will force water up underneath the shingles, right?
No, I got
all that common sense stuff. Okay, cool.
Yeah. You almost have to be on a ladder on the eave of the roof to do that when you spray it.
Because I want to go down the shingles. Not up this
right, exactly.
Right. You could spray from a ladder from the eave if it's a real steep pitch, but you wanted to get a good arc on the water flow.
Yes, sir.
So that it's so create it like it's raining.
Right, right. Okay. I didn't ask your screener about this. I just popped in my head. I have a crawl space and I had an accident with a pipe that leaked, and I had to get a big mess cleaned up under there. And half of my vapor barrier was taken out, so I need to replace that. And I heard you guys talk about, one of you said that you used like a 16-gauge plastic sheeting. I haven't been able to find that.
Or 6 mil.
6 mil.
16 mil, yeah.
6 mil.
It's
six mil.
6 mil. Oh, so it's six mil or, and then 10 mil's heavier than that, but you won't find that just anywhere. But 6 mil's sufficient, and if your vents are open, they want you to use black and not clear, because if any daylight gets through, you can grow vegetation through the clear plastic, kind of like a greenhouse. If you will,
I have clear in there now.
Yeah,
but it's dark in there.
Yeah,
there's no light.
So, yeah. Okay, so as long as you keep it closed off, they sell Home Depot in different size rolls. So you choose and see which one fits you best.
Find it in the paint department.
All right. You know what? I was looking for 16.
Yeah, no, 6 mil. 16 is almost rigid. You're good.
Well, I heard one of you say.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Mike. Hang on. We are like way past the break.
Down really well. You know, it's like
Yeah, it's
never curled up.
It's heavier. Hey, Mike, if we're way past the break. If we're good, we're good. Otherwise, we'll put you on hold and take a break. Okay, awesome.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate your show.
Thanks for the call, Mike. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Going to take a break. Be right back. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. Is our number. We want to talk about home improvement things, projects, questions that are relevant to you. Mike, thank you for your call early on. Good luck. It's 6 mil poly. You're going to be a happy camper with both the roof wash and 6 mil poly. We didn't take time this morning just because we went right to calls, which is always better. But there's a bunch of stuff that we can and should and would and will, God willing, time willing, talk about this morning. And one of them, well, let's just run down, David. I want to, we teed up several projects last week, and we took a lot of, well, it took some calls, I guess. And there's a couple things I would love to talk about. And it's about just some things to do project-wise in a time of the year where we're deep into, you know, kind of do-it-yourself projects and stuff like that. This one is kind of maybe more of a winter project than a summer project, but we can talk about crown molding. I think a good one to talk about is garage organization, and we'll go down in more detail on that. Want to talk about just changing out the shower head in your shower. If you don't have a water saver shower head, if you bought an early generation, water saver shower head, I mean it's probably not so spanky as far as water flow. Like gallons per minute, it's being conservative, but the output is just like less than what you want. The options out there now for, you know, a water smart shower heads are just like they're stellar. It's like everything else. You kind of figure out the technology, and so we can talk a little bit about that. I want to talk about creating an outdoor path. And David, honestly, my ulterior motive there is talking about like laying a stone bed. And tamping and surface prep, probably more than anything else. I don't necessarily know that we can, we have some ideas and stuff, but I think the principles of that are really what's best because it then applies to any of a manner of projects. Want to talk about fixing that mold issue in the bathroom, and maybe the best place to start is a bath vent or a new bath vent or maybe some door adjustments. And then I want to talk about window boxes. I don't know where I saw it, David, but I saw like, it wasn't, I promise it wasn't on Pinterest. I love Pinterest and I hate Pinterest. I love Pinterest when I'm looking at stuff. I hate it when Barbara is. The thing is,
if you were just looking, yeah, and that was it.
But there was all these cool window boxes. Like I'm not particularly a live goods guy, although I did some nice stuff while Barb was away for some, hanging pots and things like that and added some color around the house. But I really liked how these window boxes took a really bland, front elevation and made it pop. And that can be brick or wood or, vinyl or hardy plank or fiber cement siding. Any surface can accommodate that. And that kind of led me to concrete anchors. If we have time, I would like to take a deep dive into concrete anchors because it scares everybody, or we get it wrong, and there's just something good about understanding that. Plus,
right,
if you don't have a hammer drill, it's an excuse to buy a new tool. I'm just offering that as an option.
The guy that doesn't really like Pinterest. But I bet you like that Home Depot app, don't you?
I do. It's up right now. I'm looking at it. I have it on my – I use it all the time, and I work there. Anyway, that, and then universal design. There were a couple questions that came up just in my conversations this week. And so I wanted to take a minute and hit you. I mean, I don't want to give everybody, we don't need to provide a certification in universal design. But I think as folks, you know, do deck projects and outdoor projects and interior renovations, understanding a handful of key principles around universal design just saves time and money later on if you have to do something for, you know, an aging family member. Or guess what? You and me, bro, we aging.
Right. Well, and it's actually a helpful selling point too. So.
And so that's everything that I had on here. And then we will do, I believe, perhaps for the first time ever, home improvement trivia. We'll save that for the top of the second hour. But we have a cool home improvement trivia question. And what will you win if you get the home improvement trivia question right? Close your eyes. What do you see? Nothing. That's it. So we'll just have a little fun with that. It's a cool question, I think. Maybe if it's cool enough, we'll start a little trend. Who knows? And then, of course, we'll do our product of the week. And that's it. That's all I've got. And you know what? I have a pile of tips of the week. Every week when we do this, I pull out a pile of tips of the week and I say, all right, we'll go through these. And we never get to them, which is fine. That means we're talking about other stuff. And then I don't know, David, what's out there from an email perspective.
It's been pretty quiet. Just I tell you what really the theme seemed to be the last couple of weeks was deck questions. A lot of Cedar Shield questions and you know, where to buy it, when to apply it, who applies it. So just those questions. But if you have any questions about that, certainly give us a call and we can talk about that. I just wanted to mention that now that we're through the pollen season is a time to get started on sealing decks, washing ceiling, decks and driveways. You know, I'm going to probably get on my driveway and put my second coat on it, but I missed it before the pollen came, and you know, now's the time. So
yeah, today is I did all the decks and all the outside stuff last week, outside furniture. Time for Sealcrete for the products that's going to work on, and this week is the front porch, the stone porch, and all that nonsense. So that's a great point. We can talk about pressure washers also. We're going to be right up against the break right now, though, so we'll go ahead and take it. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're at 704-570-1110. Give us a call, and we'll chat when we return from these important messages. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we're taking your calls at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Before we jump into the topics we laid out there or take calls, I want to do our Home Depot product of the week. And this week, it's the 40-volt, it's a Ryobi 40-volt brushless self-propelled walk-behind mower. It's time. It's time to bite the bullet. Take the plunge, go electric. It just makes sense in this arena because I just did some math, David, real quick. So super easy to use, super easy to store. It's part of the Ryobi 40 volt system. So if you wanted to, you could have the blower, you can have the weed, you know, edger, you can have the mower. All that stuff is great, but if you put into your regular gas-powered lawnmower the ethanol-free gas, which would, you know, mean you don't have to, which keeps it from becoming a problem when you put the, you know, the stuff that has ethanol in it, you end up with issues, and then you have to do tune-ups and stuff. Well, you should do tune-ups anyway. But anyway, if it's $3.59, and I think I'm generous with that price, and you run, you do a gallon a month, I don't know, of and you do it forever, how many, or a gallon a week, I'm sorry, a gallon a week, it's $125 just for gas. So forget tune-ups, forget spark plugs, forget air filters, all that junk, just $125. If you buy a mower, there's a version that costs about $329. That's payback in 2.6 years. That mower will last more than 2.6 years. If you get the more expensive, and really, you can buy different features, the payback is, you know, 3.9, say 4 years. And if you add one tune-up to that, obviously a year immediately disappears, right? So the payback makes sense. Maintenance makes sense. It's the way to go. I know that that's more time than I typically spend, but I just think it's a great product. I love the Ryobi stuff because they've really thought through it well. And that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week, a 40-volt brushless walk-behind, self-propelled. It's self-propelled. Don't have to push. There he is. That's it. That's our product of the week for this week. Whew. All right. Where do you want to start? You want to start with something fun like concrete anchors, or you want to do some of the project stuff first, sir?
Well, let's do the flower boxes and then work into
the anchors. That's a good idea.
Yeah, different ways, because there's many things. I guess maybe the first thing is to talk about what, you know, do you buy them? Do you build them? You know, what's the first step? And then, you know, what does that look like? Right. I mean, is it the width of the window? Is there a standard? If you have shutters, do you go out to the width of the shutters, or do you stay within the width of the window? You know, what do you think, John?
So I think that those are all good questions. Go ahead. I aesthetically, here's where I think we have huge advantages, right? I'm a sketch person. Like when I do a project, I even take notes when I'm not using an iPad or computer generated notes, which I try to do most of the time now because there's just so many reasons to do it that way. But my notebooks forever, my notepads, stenos, whatever you want to call them, are graph paper. I take all my notes on graph paper. And then I sketch everything out. So if I was going to do window boxes, I would literally draw out, you know, where the shutters are, the width of the windows, and then I would do two things, actually three things. Number one, I would show a version between the shutters, and then I would sketch a version extending beyond to the shutters or beyond. And then the third thing I would do is take both of those options to Barbara and say, all right, well, what do you think?
Right? Yeah, there you go. What'd she tell you? The only taste you have is in your mouth?
all my taste is in my mouth, with the exception of my taste in women. Because clearly I have selected
an exceptional woman. So those are great ideas, and I do the same. I all my projects, everything that I, almost everything I do, I draw it out first and sketch it so that I can see it in my mind, but I like to draw it out and then see it on paper. Another thing you could do, John, is for a window box is you could cut a piece of cardboard to the size, and then you could go out and tape it to the wall on the front of your house and then get back and look at it.
That's a really good point.
And that way you can really tell what you have, you know, and you could do it both ways. You could stretch it out and make it wider than the window if you have shutters. If you don't have shutters, then I think you just make it the width of the window, and that would be that.
Done. Yeah.
So, you know, and I think once you have that down, you know, you kind of would figure out, you know, how big do you want to make it, and then you would need to know that, and then you need to choose a material to build it out of. So, I mean, for me, my go-to now would be PVC. I'm just a believer in PVC all the way around.
It's durable. And you could buy, it's light, right? It's structural.
And you can even have it, so if you wanted to, they make the PVC, a lot of the PVC that's available has a wood grain or smooth. And then, of course, you could paint that with, if you wanted to paint it a color and not leave it white, that would be the ideal thing. I would put it together with screws, and I would probably use some type of polyurethane adhesive as I put it together. A couple of things you could do is for drainage, you could leave the box, the ends of it, cut the bottom short on the left and the right edge. So that you would have drainage, and then before you put your dirt in there, you'd lay landscape fabric, put your potting soil, something that I just learned as I'm building I'm going to do garden, but I'm going to do all container gardens. Well, there's a huge difference in the soil that you mm-hmm. use. So mm-hmm. it has to be potting soil made for containers because it has more fines or more debris in there to help it drain, which only makes sense, right?
Yep.
You know, if you've never really thought about it, you can't put topsoil in a container and then plant something in it. Well, you can, but it probably... It'll drown, even if you have holes, because what it does is it compacts down so tight that the water takes too long to run through it, and you said it, you get root rot, and it kills everything in there, unless it's a cypress tree.
You get really cool cypress trees, which tends to rip the box off the house.
The wall.
We've seen that happen with gutters, right? People with trees mm-hmm. growing in their gutters. All right, David, I want to talk about a couple other things related to that, but we're way past our break, so we'll go ahead and take it, folks. Folks, it's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're talking about all kinds of stuff this morning, so give us a call at 704-570-1110, and we'll talk about what's important to you when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we are taking your calls this morning at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We're talking about the window box project. David, your recommendation for what product do you use to make the actual box, and recommending PVC, mm-hmm. I think, is a good one. Go ahead.
I just want to throw a couple other things in there too. So yes. You could also use cedar, which will hold up. It's probably not going to be as durable as the PVC. But if you wanted that wood look, and you don't want to use cedar, you can use a gel stain over that PVC. There's ways to do that to make it look like wood. I would look it up and see all the processes, because I don't know what they are, but I know that it can be done.
It takes a little bit of work. It's a little different. You use a different tool to actually apply the gel stain.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can make it look good, and then of course you need to protect it with some type of polyurethane, probably a waterborne polyurethane. It would do well. It doesn't yellow. Of course you could just use wood, you could use cedar, and it'll hold up for a long time. It's just, yeah, usually I think you have to order most cedar if you want larger, thicker lumber, which you do need, because you can't use like a fence board. It's too thin.
Right. Depending on the store, I know I can't. Some of the Home Depot stores actually carry cedar boards, three-quarter board, which mm-hmm. would, a three-quarter-inch board, one by, which would probably be acceptable. You have to do some reinforcement kind of things, though, at the corners.
Exactly.
So the stuff doesn't pull apart on you.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could use some galvanized brackets on the inside of the box where you wouldn't see them, would hold it. Again, glue and screws can really... They can pretty much hold the world together. You just need to pre-drill so that you don't split the boards out, because you're so close to the edges when you put it together. That's therein lies the problem, right?
Yep, exactly. And you can do any of a number of things. You could even do it if you wanted to with another piece of wood blocking and screw into that. Mm-hmm. Just the metal tends to be a little bit more durable. The thing that to consider, though, I think that's important is weight.
Yes.
Because you got to remember, you're going to, depending on the size of your window, you've got the weight of the wood, then you're going to add dirt, and you're going to add the weight of water, because that dirt is always going to hold some amount of water, right?
Right.
And
dirt weighs more than dry dirt, right?
Something about that.
I went to school for a long time.
Yeah. It's like my, exclamation a couple of weeks ago that 40 gallons was only 10 gallons less than a 50-gallon tank.
Higher math. I'm just trying to keep up, man.
Higher math with John and Dave. All right. Anyway, so that's That's it in a nutshell. How tricky do you want to get, right? Do you want to miter the corners so you don't see, you know, a grain edge? That's up to you. You can do it with a, you know, with a table saw.
Yeah, you're in my estimation, unless you want to use some type of brackets on the inside of the box to fasten the corners together, you're better off to keep it simple and just use square edges and butt them. If you paint it or stain it, chances are where they're at, no one's going to see the edges right. of the boxes anyway. The focal point's going to be the front.
You want
you can add some design to the front. You could just do a smaller rectangle on the box would make it look like a raised panel, which would be a nice.
You can get PVC trim to match those profiles.
If you just go stand in the aisle, in the trim aisle, you'll be amazed at what's available in PVC. So lots of little tricks there. And then I think the next thing, John, is how do we hang the box?
Yes.
I'm not a proponent of just screwing a box directly to the wall. Even if it's brick, I just think that you trap moisture. I think you need to have a bracket that is basically a hanger. You would use two or three of them depending on the size or the length of the box. And you would fasten those hangers. They would be L-shaped. And then depending on, you know, it'd be better if they had a little a guard in the front so that the box couldn't slide off. But you could always just put a stop across and, you know, make them stick out further than the actual depth of the box. Ideally, what you probably want to do is find the bracket first and build the box to fit the bracket.
I want to say check online, but I feel like I have seen, and I feel like I've seen them at Home Depot, but I'm not sure, an actual window box bracket that does precisely that. It's built to hold a window box. Go figure.
There you go.
Let somebody else do the engineering for you.
Sure. Well, the nice thing about that is, and the reason that I like to see a bracket versus fastening directly to the wall is trapping moisture between the siding, the brick, whatever. You don't want to trap moisture. You're going to cause a problem. I mean, the first thing would be mold and mildew,
right?
Bugs, whatever. I mean, bugs are going to get back behind there anyway. But if you leave an inch of space between the back of the box and the wall itself that it's mounted to, you have opportunity for airflow to get in there and keep it dried out. So that's just one of my things, because especially if it's on some type of siding, you don't want to trap moisture back there.
What about penetrating the hole that goes through whatever the surface is? If it's brick, it's a little less critical. We'll talk about that probably after the break. But I ran polyurethane sealant into the hole and then ran my screw in so that when I fastened the screw, some of it squirted out. I knew that I had a pretty good seal and water was not getting in my penetration as well, right? So I don't know if that's overkill, but I think that's probably prudent.
No, I do the same thing. And then, I mean, ideally, if you could find a bracket that could hang off of the trim of the window or the row lock. A row lock is on a brick house, and that is that's the brick that has a little pitch to it that allows the water to run off. And if you can hang it, you can hang it there. But you mentioned that, John, mounting it to a brick house, a bracket is not a big a deal. It's not going to create as many problems as if you're punching through vinyl siding, you know, a hardboard siding, or even hardy plank, because you know, getting through hardy plank to begin with is a job.
Yes,
that you need a proper drill, proper tools to do that.
All right, look, we're going to be really close to a break, so we'll go ahead and get ready to do that. But wow, it feels like we took a lot of time on a box. I guess that's how it is. But we'll talk about anchoring and then probably move into the concrete anchor concepts, because one question will lead to another with that. And I think there's a lot of good information to share. And there's a whole lot to do that's easier, better, sturdier than I think the average bear might understand. And so we just want to make sure we share that. If you would like to join us and talk about something totally different, we're cool with that too. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110 to talk about what you want to talk about. Or you can go to AskJohnAndDave.com, click on the questions button, and send us a note that way, or just send a note to questions@AskJohnAndDave.com. And we can tackle it that way. So anyway, any way you slice it, we're going to have another full hour of home improvement ahead of us. We'll do a little home improvement trivia when we come back after the break. And we'll tackle your questions at 704-570-1110 when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doeful.
Give us a call this morning. We're in hour number two of Home Improvement Questions. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We're talking about stuff, projects that you can do around the house. We kind of took a minute on actually building correctly and mounting correctly. Just a flower box. We're talking about things just kind of give facelifts, whether it's inside the house, outside the house. We'll talk about any of a number of things, but it's always best when we talk about what's important to you at 704-570-1110. David, I thought we'd have a little bit of fun this morning with some home improvement trivia. I just came across this in a magazine, and I thought, yeah, we'll share it. Here goes. What 1894 invention of Augustine Sackett changed the building industry forever? What 1894 invention of Augustine Sackett changed the building industry forever? So we'll see if people know that, the answer to that question. We were talking about mounting a flower box, and it kind of causes the ADD gears to kick in and say, mounting into brick, and then brick, hey, what about just mounting things or anchoring things in concrete, you know, at large? And I feel like that's a good topic to take a headlong dive into. What do you think, sir?
Well, yeah, because it's beyond just window boxes. There's lots of things that people want to mount to masonry. And sometimes it's a little scary. You said it best probably because you don't have the proper tool, because you have to have a hammer drill. You don't have to, but it sure makes it a lot easier. To drill the hole for the anchor. So I don't know, where do you want to start with that?
So I think let's start to simple and go complex. And so I think the simplest thing is mounting something to a vertical surface using an easy anchor or what's the blue screw?
Tapcon.
Thank you. Tapcon screws. Easy anchors are into drywall. So a Tapcon screw. Let's start there, David, because they're actually pretty good.
Oh, I have boxes of different sizes and lengths. They've increased the sizes. They have larger ones, and some of them are actual. They're structural Tapcons available now, up to 1/2 inch or 5/8. So they're very strong. But the beauty of those types of screws is that they screw directly into the masonry. So they'll go into block or brick. They don't do so well in mortar. Mortar's kind of soft. Not necessarily what you want to anchor into with a Tapcon. Concrete, and really you drill the proper size hole, and it'll tell you on the box. And you drill the hole, and then you actually just drive the screw right in the hole that you just drilled. There's no anchor. There's no epoxy. There's nothing you have to do other than that. And they hold They're pretty strong for pull out, and then they also have a shear factor. So if you're hanging something on the wall, the shear would be the amount of pressure that it would take to snap that screw off on the wall. And, you know, some things I can think about, John, would maybe be someone that maybe you have a porch that you want to hang a TV mount on, something like that. Now, what I normally do with something like that is I would take a piece of plywood or dimensional lumber, and I would make that a little bigger than my bracket, and then I would fasten that to the wall with the tapcons, and then I would fasten my bracket to the wood.
And it gives you well, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I say it just gives you a couple of advantages, right? So.
I think the big advantage is it gives you more latitude with where you place whatever you're hanging, right? So if you said a mortar joint might not be optimal versus getting straight into a brick, right? Well,
there you
go. If you use the wider piece of wood, you can place it so that it goes into the brick, and then if the actual bracket that you want to fasten now lands over a mortar joint, it's solidly anchored to a piece of wood, which is solidly anchored, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think
exactly. And then you just paint that piece of wood whatever color. You can either paint it black, or if you wanted to paint it, try to match the paint of the color of the brick. And it's just a good way to do it. The other thing about that is if it was a prefab fireplace or something like that that had a wood frame, you could stretch that wood out past the studs, find the studs, fasten that, and then be able to fasten that bracket. I know that's off the subject of the anchors, but that's one of the reasons.
Probably could have touched on that with the box thing we were talking about, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So tapcons are amazing. So they go from a quarter inch on up to I haven't used anything above a 5/8, but they're pretty handy. It's a pretty handy, and they come in lots of different lengths as well.
What about drilling, picking the size hole for that?
Well, when you decide what size anchor you think or screw you want to use, you look at that box and it will tell you the size that you have to drill. I think the larger ones are the size of the diameter of the screw. So if it says it's a three, if it's a half inch, then I think you drill a half inch hole. But make sure you read the directions, and it's as simple as that. It's great for all types of things. You can even use them to if you have that rail, that wrought iron rail out there, mm-hmm. that's come loose. They work great for that as well. And then we'll share a tip. I want to share a tip with that too, and a little bit, John, about if you have where an anchor has already been, or some type of a screw, there's some things that you can do. Because sometimes something like a handrail is fixed and you don't have any place to move it because it was made for that particular area.
Right.
So you have to remount it right where it's at.
All right, so let's let that be our teaser. We'll move off to a break. If you have questions, call us at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. If you know the answer to what 1894 invention of Augustine II changed the building industry forever, you can call us at 704-570-1110. Also, we're going to take a break and be right back to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. David, you had a tip for the wrought iron rail, and we'll reveal the 1894 discovery or invention. Go ahead.
If you have an anchor or a screw or something that was through a wrought iron foot or bracket that holds it in place, mm-hmm. and it stripped out. And John, you were talking about that earlier. You can put some polyurethane adhesive down in there, something that will that sticks to masonry. And then you just push that screw back down in there, and it will hold. there's other epoxies that are yes. that are more expensive that you could purchase that go in a caulk tube. But you know, if you only have one screw, you hate to buy that whole tube of epoxy. I think it's $30 for a tube of that versus what, $7 for a tube of polyurethane, that P&L adhesive mm-hmm. That will pretty much bond anything to anything, even exactly. if it's damp.
That's a great solution. That's a great solution.
Yeah, I've used that a few times, and it's you know, because I think people think they're done, or you know, you're doomed if something like that happens. And you know, even if the brick breaks off, I don't know if you've ever seen that, but on the side of the porch where they fasten too yep. close to the edge, sometimes the pressure forces the brick and snaps it off. If you have that piece of brick, clean it up, clean the both surfaces up, and you can actually glue that back on there too with that polyurethane. It'll pull it back together, and then drop your screw down in the hole while that polyurethane's wet. You might have to use a piece of duct tape or something to hold the brick tight and hold it in place, but that works pretty well.
That is a good recommendation. David, do you know, before we go to our next topic or our next anchor, do you know the 1894 invention of Augustine Sackett that changed the building industry forever?
I do. Do you want me to answer it, or are we waiting?
I think you should.
There's no prizes, right?
No, it's not. Nobody's going to, you know, retire young.
Nah, I'm not answering then. I believe it's drywall.
Drywall is correct. Augustine Sackett in 1894 invented sheetrock drywall. Sheetrock is a brand name.
Correct.
Drywall. Pretty
very cool.
Crazy. If you live in a home, well, it was built since 1894. The home I grew up in Chicago was like newer than that, but not by a lot. And it was all the lath and then the brown coat and then plaster. So labor was extracted from the equation in a major fashion.
Right. Think about how long it took for that to actually catch on, to be able to just cover the walls with not really one step, but almost one step. You fasten the drywall, then you come back and you tape the joints with joint compound, and you put a couple of coats on there, a couple, two, three coats, you sand it, and you prime it and paint it, and you're done. Versus what all the steps you have to go through for plaster.
Hanging the lath. And in 1894, they were not using, as a general rule, metal lath. It was wooden lath. Remember, we used Correct. To sell that. I don't think you can even find that anymore. I don't know. I don't know where you would find it.
We can. They're lattice strips.
It's a lot more expensive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's dressed then. Yeah, you know, exactly. That stuff was all rough sawn.
Just rough sawn wood. And the, you know, the rough coat, the brown coat, and I remember growing up when Mr. Willie was our painter and plaster guy, and he came in and redid our dining room, you know, lath and plaster, and I don't know. Anyway, all good.
It's art.
It is really. Good luck finding somebody that really does it well right now, right? It's part of the challenge that we face. All right, so 704-570-1110 is our number. Give us a call. We want to talk about what's important to you. We're on the topic of concrete anchors right this minute. We talked about the Tapcon screws, which are awesome. A relatively recent entrance into the concrete anchoring systems solution set. But I have written down here, redheads and lag shields. Probably lag shields is the next most simple version of that, I guess. And a lag shield could be plastic or it could be metal, right? Talk mm-hmm. about that one, David, if you would.
Well, those are inserts, and so you would position and you would figure out where you want your hole, and then you would drill it to the size of the shield, whether it be, like you said, lead or plastic, an anchor. You drill that hole. That hole is usually larger than the screw itself to accommodate to the diameter of the anchor itself. So right. You drill the hole, you drive the anchor in, and then you put your bolt, your screw into the anchor itself, or, you know, probably go through whatever you're holding on to the surface. And that's pretty much it. So, and it could be anything from a hex head lag bolt to a Phillips head screw, you know, that goes into that type of anchor.
And then it's kind of designed to, if the hole in the anchor is a little bit smaller than the actual screw itself, and it tapers down a little bit, right? So as you get to the bottom of it, it pushes out.
Yeah, it expands inside the surface, and that's where you get your holding power. You know, especially if it's masonry, there's always an opportunity for those to not go in properly. Mm-hmm. So I pretty much have gone exclusively to Tapcons. Once in a while, you have to use a different type of anchor for different reasons, but. You know, but that's a little tougher in masonry. Drywall anchors are a little bit different. It's the same principle in the plastic. You know, you drill your hole through, you put the anchor, you run your screw through it, but it's only as strong as the drywall. So you have to be careful, and you can't get carried away with hanging real heavy things on drywall. You can, but there's other methods that you probably should take.
So, no, I agree. And you always have to consider the substrate or the concrete or the drywall, whatever you're going into, and the strength of it, and the position or thickness of it. If you're drilling into a slab, it's different than a brick, right? In a slab, you are less likely to blow out. You know, when I say blow out, as you drive your anchor into the sleeve, you know, there's pressure in an outward direction. And if you're too close to the edge of a brick or a concrete block, you're blowing that edge out, and then you got, you know, new problems. In a slab, not so much. In a poured wall, not so much. But what about deck posts where you're going into anchoring a column on a porch or a deck post into concrete, and you've got a Simpson strong tie anchor. And we may run out of time on this. We got 24, 25. Let's not start that conversation. We'll hold that off till after the break, because there's some really cool solutions that make wood to concrete off attachments much easier, but they're relying on a little bit more sophisticated solution from a concrete anchor perspective. And so we'll talk about that. We'll also talk about whatever questions are more important than that to you. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110, or questions@askjohnanddave.com. Send a question that way. We'll take the time to answer those questions for you. So grab a cup of coffee, get your questions ready, 704-570-1110, and we'll talk when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
We're taking calls this morning. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Before we dive into our last topic from a concrete anchor perspective, let's do our Home Depot product of the week. And this week, it's a Ryobi product. It's the Ryobi 40-volt brushless walk-behind self-propelled lawnmower. It's whisper quiet, part of the 40-volt system of batteries. Ryobi has done such an awesome job of making all manner of tools available in a compatible battery system. It's very good, and it's very affordable. David, I did the math on this. If you bought this lawnmower at about $329 and you put 1 gallon a week of gasoline, of ethanol-free gasoline into it, you would pay back this just in gas cost alone in 2.5 years. If you bought the more expensive $500 version, you'd pay it back in about 4 years. Add one tune-up or a spark plug and some filters, and boom, it's even easier. So economically, it makes complete sense. And then environmentally, it's a sustainability thing. There's all kinds of things you can do. Some of them are insane and very difficult to do, and some of them are no-brainers. This falls in the no-brainer category, in my opinion. So that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week, the Ryobi 40-volt brushless self-propelled walk-behind lawnmower. Check it out. All right, David, we were going into the last concrete anchor, and I sort of laid it out there as like, what about scenarios where you have these really great Simpson strong tie type products? There are other manufacturers, but that's probably the most prevalent one for anchoring columns and posts into concrete, like a concrete porch or a concrete patio, slab patio. What about those? What are you using then?
You talking about a drive-in,
like a redhead, maybe? Yeah.
Yes. So that's usually an anchor that has a bolt with an expanding sleeve on it, and so you drill the hole the size of the anchor, the bolt itself, and you then drive it down in, and you put a nut. You have a nut and a washer that you tighten up, and what it does is it pulls up on the bolt itself, and it pulls it up in out of the surface a little bit, and it creates a wedge, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And those are great for if you're fastening, you know, if you need to fasten a wall down to a slab,
right where you don't have an anchor bolt, yeah.
Yeah, anchoring any type of bracket to a concrete slab. That's normally what you see. I mean, if you go into Home Depot and you see the big orange racks, that's usually the type of anchor that they use to fasten those in place.
Right, into the floor. Yeah.
Right, so that they stay stationary. So those it's a more of an industrial usage most of the time, but we do use them from time to time. For different things, depends on what's going on, but they're certainly available. And then I think, John, maybe the point we talked about, the possibility of having to buy a drill, a hammer drill works best for just about every anchor that we talked about. If you're going into masonry, which was kind of what we were leading to, because there's so many different types of anchors for drywall and hollow walls. But if you don't want to buy a drill, don't forget you can rent a drill at Home Depot, and you know, they have a 4-hour rental. So if you have your project all laid out, you could shoot over there, rent the drill, and get it back within the 4 hours. It comes with the different size bits that you need, and those types of hammer drills they make short work of drilling into any type of hard surface like brick, block, or concrete. Especially if you're going into concrete. You know, some bricks harder than others, right, John? But
it is.
Concrete's usually the toughest to drill in with just a regular small hammer drill. You know, I have a big Bosch drill that I bought that, you know, you can put, you know, a core bit in it if you want to. I really bought that drill for, believe it or not, for digging, because they make a spade that goes in the end of it, a spade shovel, and you can dig in this clay with it, and it is awesome.
It's a hammer drill, sort of. You've got the hammer effect, which is why the digging piece works. So that is great advice. The other thing to consider, if you're looking at, you know, your tool arsenal and you don't have a hammer drill, go check and look at the rigid cordless drills. I think one of the cordless drill options includes a setting for hammer drill.
So, I have a Ryobi that does that.
Yeah.
And it's outstanding for small Tapcon bits.
Exactly.
And the smaller type anchors. When you start getting up around a half inch anchor, you almost need a drill that takes an SDS bit or a SDS max bit, which is what my big drill is. So if you have a lot of anchors, or you're going to do it regularly, then it's nice to have. But those drills are nice because you get the option of a regular drill or a hammer drill.
Right. I um, Even if, so we talk about LVT, that project, right? If you're putting LVT on a concrete floor in the basement, or if you're on a slab home, your transition strips have to be mounted, pardon me, or your finish strips have to be mounted, and there's a little metal piece that has to get mounted into your slab, and that Ryobi or rigid cordless drill with the hammer option is perfect for that, right? Because otherwise you're going to be, you'll have a short career for each hole trying to get it into the concrete. So, and you're just going to burn through even your masonry bits. So, okay, 704-570-1110, that's the number. We got to sneak away for our last break here, and then we'll be back to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Dave Doval.
And we have Clyde on the phone. We're going to jump right over to Clyde. Clyde, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. How are you?
Good. How you guys doing today?
Excellent. How can we help?
I have two skylights in my back porch, because the screen in the back porch. And the seals, I know, because the windows are fogged up. But now one of them started leaking, and I need to fix that. Is there a kit that does that, or you just have to play it by ear and get some materials and go from there? If there's someone that you know that might do that, I think I can do it myself, but I'm just curious about it.
Is it a Velux skylight?
I'm not sure. What did you say?
The manufacturer, you know, the manufacturer of the skylight, Clyde?
I can barely hear you.
Do you know the manufacturer of the skylight?
No.
Okay. Okay. So
are they wood, or are they a wood frame with glass, or are they a bubble?
It's a wood frame.
Okay. So it's a pretty good chance it's a Velux skylight. You can actually call them if you look it up, and they have authorized installers. I think
there's a big facility right there in Fort Mill for Velux.
There is. I'm actually talking to them right now. We're trying to work out maybe an opportunity to have them come on air and talk about all their products. But yeah, you would, if you talk with them, I've been involved with that before, and they can, I think you can either get the parts for them, but they have someone that installs, new, glazings, in those units.
And they will be able to look at the Velux system is probably one of the best that I've seen in my brief 42 year stint. In fact, I will tell you, it is the only product that I've ever sold like that, of course, that where I've never seen fail. Where there's leaks, it ends up being an installation challenge, and because of the way they manufacture the flashing kits, it's a very easy fix. So I think David's guidance is probably a good one, and I feel like they would be able to help you out from an installation perspective, whether you ended up doing it yourself or you had them or one of their authorized folks do it. But it's going to be, I'm sorry?
What's the name of that?
Velux. V-E-L-U-X.
Okay. All right. Well, let's have a look at that, and appreciate it. And thank you so much for that.
Oh, you are so welcome. We appreciate the call, Clyde. Pardon me. All right, so that David is, in my 42 years, it is the only product that I've sold where I've never had a warranty claim like, hey, yeah, the product failed. And I'm sure it happens, but that's pretty unusual. Because I've been fortunate with some pretty awesome window products and door products and stuff like that. So
yeah, and like I said, I think hopefully we'll have them on soon, and we'll talk about. They have so many different products now.
Oh my gosh, yeah,
it's very very cool what they offer. So
I think there's actually a showroom there in Fort Mill, isn't there? They have
right on 160. Sure.
Yeah,
is.
I mean, go that's worth it. Well, you got to be a bit of a home improvement nerd, but not really, and just go check it out. the things that, like the roof, like I don't know what the term
tunnels
is.
They have everything.
It's
they
incredible.
Have all of it.
It's incredible. All right, sorry about that. Didn't mean for that to be a Velux infomercial. Just great stuff. 704-570-1110. I think I wanted to talk about the TAPCONS, Redheads, and Lag Shields from a concrete anchoring perspective. And so that kind of nails, if you will, no pun intended, the topics from a concrete anchoring perspective. Now, we've got all those different projects that I talked about. Maybe with 5 minutes left, we don't go into aging in place in universal design, because I don't know that we would do it justice.
No, it's worth another day.
I think so. So let's just tackle a couple of these things, and we'll take calls 704-570-1110 here into the lightning round also. But let's just talk about bath vents, because that's a pretty simple thing to fix mold issues. And there's usually one of two things happening if we're getting mold in the bathroom. Either the vent isn't working, needs to be stepped up from a CFM perspective, or maybe we need to do some work on the door. Let's see. Before we go to that, Brooke has a comment on skylights. Let's see if we can get Brooke on here. Hey, Brooke, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Yeah. Can you hear me? I'm on my cell phone.
Yes, they work. We're good.
My son and I had an architectural window business back in the 90s, and we handle Velux skylights as one of our lines. The sales rep took us down to the plant they have down in South Carolina, and that was the most automated place I've ever seen in my life. They would take the lumber boards, would come up to the cutter, and computer would analyze it. Mm-hmm. And then they would spit out every piece of length fitted their needs for that. It just the whole operation was really nice.
It's a really well thought out design, start to finish. Most of our lumber mills now are actually computerized like that. It'll take a cant and they'll look at it. They're also optimized by revenue optimization, let's say. So if a particular dimension is selling at a per board foot rate, it'll optimize that dimension from an inventory balance perspective also, out of a cant. But yeah, it's amazing.
Anyway, they're a great line, and recommend them to anybody, although I'm retired now.
So we thank you for validating our opinion.
Okay, thank you.
Brooks, thanks so much for your comment. Thanks for sharing it with us. Folks, there you go. Somebody kind of disinterested. He's not in the business anymore. Got nothing to gain. Says it's an awesome product. So two thumbs up for that, David. Thanks for chasing that down. We were talking about, though, we were going into the bath vent. And I know we've got like 2 minutes left, but a couple things. One is make sure you've got a bath vent. And then, David, if a bath vent is in place and functioning, and, you know, the test is we put a piece of toilet paper up to it, and if it holds the toilet paper in place, that's good. If it holds your two-year-old in place, that's even better. But all of that can be for naught if there's one piece of the puzzle missing with the door, right?
Yeah, intake. You got to have air coming in the bathroom. So, you know, we like privacy, so we tend to shut the door. But if once you shut the door and it removes most of the air from the room, I mean, it's not taking it all out, but it cannot draw. It doesn't have a return, so to speak. So usually gets it from underneath the door. So we want to make sure we have at least a 1-inch opening underneath the door of the bathroom when it's closed so that the vent can have air. So that it can expel the air out of the bathroom, and then it fills the bathroom back up with conditioned air from outside the room.
Right.
I think the other thing with fans, John, is that we don't run them long enough. So anytime we do a bathroom or remodel or just in conversation, I always encourage folks to put in some type of a timer switch on their fan so that the fan can continue to run after you leave, because if you're energy conscious, you want to reach in there and flip that fan off. You don't want it to run all day while you slip out and go to work.
Right.
But if you put a timer, you can set it for 20, 30, 60 minutes, depending on what kind of timer you buy. And that lets that fan run and do its job longer because it takes a while for it to move that humid air out of the bathroom. And that helps eliminate lots of problems when you can keep that space dry.
Perfect. That saves a ton of headaches. I won't mess with it. There's a couple of timers. You got to do a little bit of checking out to make sure you put the right kind of timer in, depending on how your wiring and switch and stuff hits the box. But we don't have time for that. It's a no-brainer if you just check it out when you pick up the switch. All right, we are out of time. 2 hours went screaming by, folks. Thanks so much for being with us this morning. We love the fact that we can share as much information as possible in a brief 2 hours. And we also love reminding you that we think that the most important kind of home improvement that you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live. Don't forget to work on that project this week. And we'll see you next week when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.